Mr. Chadwick, Reel 27. We're talking about your time with the 1st Battalion DLI, coming to the end of the Korea conflict. And you just mentioned about this barbed wire fence that was established in No Man's Land. You were just going to say what it was for.
Well, we explained it to them exactly how it would work. They were delighted. Thought it was great.
How would it work? You were interrupted in mid-flow.
Well, you could move these enemy troops across to there, or you could take cover behind it. And it was a good protection for you. But, as I said before, they didn't patrol the valley floor. And when the attack did come in from the Chinese, because they knew they weren't fighting us anymore, they knew there was nobody down on that valley floor at night, they put an attack in. So the Americans immediately went to defend, coming in right flanking behind that wire. The wire was gone because they never patrolled the valley floor. They'd lost control and they were annihilated. And we were pulled back in the line to redeem it. The consequence of that was it made it very hard work for us for the first fortnight, because the Chinaman was running all over that valley floor at night until he realised that Tommy was back.
Did the Australians patrol the valley floor? And what about French, Belgians, Turks?
I can't speak a lot about them, but I think they were. All by the Americans, because none of the other positions had quadruple mounted Browns. But you stand to at night, you stand to at morning. Last thing at night, every man, there's nothing happening. All armies do it. You stand to and you check ammunition, check stage, and you do likewise next morning. But they used to stand to, say, stand to was 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock at night. And then they would say, fire, you press these ticks. And 5 Browns blast away. Another fire, all the way up. Stand to, stand down. Good event. Go and lie on the bench and lie around. And then maybe at 10 o'clock at night, you give another burst. Another burst about 4 in the morning, going nowhere, just to let Johnny know that they were alert. But he got wise to it. And he crept over and crept over. The men laid up for 2 or 3 nights. He built up the strength. And then, without any warning whatsoever, the Americans were found with a throat cut in pajamas in the line. And that was the essence of the difference, the way they fight as the way we fight.
Did you think it was all worthwhile being out there? I mean, did you understand what you were fighting for?
I enjoyed it because it's what I like doing. Not killing people, but living rough. The camaraderie we had, and let's face it, you have none of these civilian things to worry about. You know, you're as free as birds up there. You're living hard but rough. You're in the fresh air. You have some hellish, humorous incidents which made you chuckle. There was times when you were tired out. That was all part of the job. You're always on the move. You're going to a new hill, new task. Some lads might disagree. I liked it. The sticky bits, well, forget them. But by and large, it was nice. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was great.
So, in the end, they signed this thing. After this period of heightened activity, you've been back in the line, back ready to go in the line, but then in the end you weren't needed. What happened next then?
We went through then down to the concentration area. After about 3 days, little celebrations, officers' big shots, football matches, all this kind of business. For a few weeks, not many, I think about 3 weeks to a month, we went back up the line filling in trenches. and we learnt more. In that few weeks, then we'd known, because there had been strict instructions not to speak to the Chinese lads who were filling in trenches. Well, you might as well put a fraternisation ban on. And I spoke to a Chinese officer who'd been educated in London, spoke perfect English, and he told us the thousands of troops that we'd been facing. And I also said to him, are you starting evacuating your troops back to China? He said, we're not bothering with them. They're on their own after now. They can either stop here, get themselves a little paddy field, find themselves up, but he says, we're not taking people back. The very elite troops will go back. The rest will leave. I said, well, how did you do for mail and admin? Oh, he said, didn't bother with mail. They didn't get letters. And the things we learned talking to him, but as I say, we were filling the trenches in.
Did you lift the mines?
Oh, we can clear the panels. All right. Well, the RVs could come along because they were all, well, everybody is supposed to map where mines are.
How did you lay them? Just because I missed that. How did you lay the minefields?
Of all the places in.
What type were they?
Well, you'd and that use of the German mines, Talon mines, etc. They were personnel mines, and trip mines, but mostly mines for 100-pound pressure. Or anybody above 8 stone walking on them would trigger them off. And of course, with a mine panel, invariably you get a sympathetic detonation, i.e., if one goes off, they all go off around that area. So you've no chance of getting out. But there were no problem. I mean, we didn't indiscriminately mine.
Did the other side have mines?
Well, they have mines there. I'm not saying as well conducted as ours.
What precautions did you take when going around the valley floor? Because they could have laid them anywhere there.
I'll take precautions. Take what look.
Did they lay many on the floor?
Or? I wouldn't think so. And of course, persistent shelling is a great deterrent because it blows them up. You don't know whether 20 mines went up along with the shell when it lands. So you never really know. But they wouldn't put them in the middle of the valley floor. I mean, that's now the use of an ornament. That's a real catch-as-catch can. And, you know, you used to do it silently, like you used to do your wiring at night silently. But of course, we used to have those things with a handle on and stuff with old sacks to knock the pickets in, silent pickets, and then just string your direct wire on it for silence. But everything needs to be done as silent as possible.
Oh, and the other point was, how did you get your own mail and post parcels?
Oh, good. Good service. Great. It was delivered to us in the line. And of course, being BFBO, they've got a preference for being an active service, so they made sure the mail, which is a very important factor for morale, of course.
Did you get many parcels yourself?
No, they sent me parcels. Oh, the mayor of Durham sent me one. I got one, we all got one from the mayor of Durham. I've still got the card upstairs.
What was in that?
Usually saying, cap comfort, a pair of socks, 200 cigarettes in flat, everybody sent cigarettes, flat 10, a few sweets or something, a little chop, something, I just forget exactly what was in. But we all got a Mary Dillon's Christmas phone parcel. Yeah.
So, getting back things, so we're just picking up points as they come up there, but so after this, you were clearing the trench lines, or filling them in. Then what?
Nothing. Just normal camp routine.
How long?
only weeks before we embarked.
So when did you leave?
I think it was August.
53.
August, September. I know I had my birthday on board ship anyway.
And where were you off? Where did you know where you were going?
I thought we were going home. And then we were supposed to go to the colony, Hong Kong, and we finished up in Egypt. We went to Egypt and came back with the glorious clusters. And on board was Colonel Khan and the current General Farrarotti. There was Captain Farrarotti. And him and I had a steaming argument.
What about?
I met him. We decided to throw a party at the Sarks Mess. And we decided that we'd invite all field rank and above. Correction. We decided we'd invite the ship's master, Colonel Jeffries, and Colonel Khan. Now that alleviates any other officers. So there's no majors, no captain, no lieutenant. The only reason being we haven't room to accommodate them. So the invites went out and I was PMC in the mess then. The next day, our captain, fire officer, was, they were all coming out to prison war camp. And at that time, with the greatest respect, Colonel Khan was either going to come home and get court-martialed to get the VC. Well, he got the VC. And I don't really know much about the Gloucester. There were 638 approximately taken prisoner out of 709. Not very good, either. Broad daylight, etc., etc. However, they made a glorious thing out of a big copper, in my book. Well, Father Rockley, I saw him go to one of the soldiers and he must have said, "Who's that Major Chadwick?" I said, "That's him." He came across very outspoken by that one. He said, "I've received your invitation and it will not be complied with. Appreciate it later." Well, I said, "I'm afraid I'm in charge of Sarks Mess, but I'm so gross." Well, he said, what he was saying was, if the colonel comes, I must come with him. Well, I said, "You're not on. Because if you come, you're the captain. We've got to invite all captains and majors, and we can't get them in." So we had a bit of a thing, but not basically. And later in the day, Captain Scott sent for me, our adjutant, to run as well. And he said, "Look, Captain Farrarotti is quite right. Colonel Khan is in such a physical wreck that he will not go an inch in for a meal without his adjutant. He's got a lot." Oh, I said, "That's a fair one." I said, "Look, can we take it from the permission from the colonel that yourself and Colonel Jeffries comes, Father Rockley and Colonel Khan comes, and the ship's captain comes. And no major," he said, "that will do that. No, we do tell him." So they all came, and I was a fair one. He was in the house. I mean, he must have had a terrible burden. You know, some of them men were watching the cinema when the Chinese arrived. The outdoor AKC, we call it, Army Cinema. A bit funny. And we'd had to cross the River Indian, and it was 4 miles down the road. And the officers hadn't standing patrols. They weren't ready for them. And, however, he came back, he got awarded the VC, he went to the boys' school at Chepstow, did about a year, and then went into oblivion. Never heard of him after that. And I was were talking about that, the three young boys in the boat. And the other,
So what happened when you got to Egypt? Why Egypt?
British forces, canal zone, all on the canal.
Which barracks? Or camp?
St. Gabriel's, on the Treaty Road, tented camp. Not all tented.
Well, what town was it near?
There. You know, have you been on the canal top? I had to tell it could be Jimmy for 4 2 3, but we were in Fayette, and we did 2 years there. And one day it was the same as the other.
What were you doing basically?
Drill, weapon training, route marches, sport, climatical conditions, a lovely Warren Dawson Science Club to go to, no social life, because, well, I mean, there was a small contingent of ADS and a B&H, but that was, so it was all male company we were involved in. And after 15 to 18 months, people were getting just a bit browned off with one in this company.
How did you get on with the Egyptians?
Never bothered with them much. They're golly golly men and all these. Because the word Egyptian is a very funny word, because most of the ones you encounter are a bastard race. They're a bit of everything, and they've all got one eye, and of course that's done at birth. The mothers used to stick a diamond needle in the eye, eight out of the bed, blind. And B kept them out of the armed forces. And that's what it was done for. And again, I enjoyed it. I just like the open spaces of it all. And we used to sit on the veranda of the vessel at night. And it was a wonderful sight. You could actually see the ships sailing up the desert, coming up the canal, because you couldn't see the banks. From where we were sat, you can see all the superstructure. They've got the sun, and at that side is the Sinai desert. And at night time, lit up, you see them just wafting by on the Suez Canal, a great sight.
So that would take you from 53 through to
55.
And where then?
Then the big day arrived. I got married after 3 weeks courtship.
Where did you meet her?
No, wrong life. I went to her brother's to babysit.
You come back to England then?
Yeah. Went to her brother's to babysit. Watched the cup final. Lillian came down to babysit for her brother, so that me and his wife could go out and have a drink. And it started from there. We caught it 3 weeks and we're married. That's how quick it happened.
So, did the whole battalion come back to England after Egypt?
And this then changes the whole pattern of life for all of us. All of us, what they termed as the older generation then, we all got found out. They brought the battalion up and started again with younger, newer lads.
So all you old sergeants, you were distributed through the training establishment?
The training establishment. They sent me to the TA.
So you were no longer regarded as the frontline troops?
Yes, but we'd have a break. We've done regimental soldiering for the last 12 or 13 years. So it was time we found out. We used to call it rehabilitating. Get you used to being back home for a spell.
How did you, because you didn't like that. You dodged that in the early, late 40s, rather.
No. I dodged serving in England with the battalion. With the TA, it was different. I was my own boss.
Which TA?
8th Battalion, Drone Light Infantry.
And what were you? Company Sergeant Major?
Staff Instructor, Company Sergeant Major. I had my own drill hall.
Where was that?
Chesley Street, County Down. And for the next 2.5 to 3 years, same routine. 2 drill nights a week. And every weekend on the ranges or training. So, and then I formed the boxing team, which did extremely well. And that 3.5 years, whatever it was, went back. It was great.
What did you think of the territorials? I mean, as soldiers?
Well, I know a lot of them. There's a big difference between territorials and regulars. When they went to war in the 6th, 8th and 9th, 1939, thank God they had that winter of grace, because they were no more ready to fight than you and I would have been coming out of Civil Street.
And was it any different when you were with them?
Well, most of them were ex-war soldiers.
So they were older men?
Older men. And none of them were, most of them would have been called up for the war if they'd have been there. Their age, but there was big money.
Were you not getting the intake through then?
On paper, you have thousands. National service. Because after the national service, they automatically did 3 years of it a year. But they had to attend. Unless they wanted to. If they did and put the drills in, they qualified for bounty. And quite a few did. But quite a lot said, I must say, not, I've done it in a year, that's it, I'm finished. There was thousands of hundreds of thousands of pounds given in TAs.
In what way? How did
that? People getting booked for drills that shouldn't have been, getting paid for weekends when they weren't there. But that's something that's gone now. It took a long time to put it right.
You didn't get people just joining the territorials, and I presume, you know, young lads.
Oh, yes. Oh, we were keen to get them, even if they hadn't done national service. But what the lads came in for was the money. It was damn good money.
What was the money then? Why was it so good?
Well, drone knives. You know, I did them years then, I can't remember the terms. But, say if you want to go for a weekend, you get 2 days Medal of Army pay in your prescribed rank, plus manager allowance, and that was paid at the end of the month. So by the end of the month, you have 4 weekends and at least 8 drills. Your bus fare was paid, or your petrol allowance was paid. Journeys to and fro, that would be quite a challenge.
Now you would be just on your normal wage though.
Oh yeah.
And so you'd be doing the drills and the weekends and then admin the rest of the time and running your boxing team.
Exactly. So, well, I do paperwork as well, I pay for it.
So that took you from what, 58 to 61?
To beginning of 59.
Sorry, I'm losing my years a bit, yeah.
From 59, I rejoined the 1st Battalion.
And where were they?
Honiton, Devon.
And what did you join them as?
Company Sergeant Major.
Which company?
C Company, my favourite company.
And what was life like there?
Same routine, a lot of training on Dartmoor. The toughest training area in the world. We never lost the moor training, which I enjoy. I'll tell you a quick story on that one. We went on Exercise Black Night. February on Dartmoor is a nightmare to anybody. I took a patrol out there, holding body patrols, me, and committed a mortal sin. I got it. Major Slim nearly died in one of the bogs on the moor there. not lost. There's no crime in that on Dartmoor. He's a brilliant man, he doesn't get lost on there. And I was trying to pick a light up from Princeton or Oakhampton. Get a bearing. But I couldn't. So I said to the lads, about 20 of us, 30 of us, just lie down where you are. This was a mortal sin. I walked away on my own. I should have taken a person with me to count the steps and look for the direction. And let me do the thinking. Turn around, I couldn't see nothing. I couldn't see the troops. I couldn't see a light. Well, but reflect you. So I started what I thought was something like the right direction. And I saw the lads all huddled together. So I went over and I said, okay, lads. It weren't lads, it was that flaming island cattle. You know, with the big horns. And the old cattle, they frightened me to death. But when they got up and made a noise, I heard the lads shouting from about, I was a couple of hundred yards up. It's like I got back. But oh, frightening in as much as I want to live in my life, it was an embarrassment to somebody who's like to think he knew the job.
As you were this period, you know, when you're training on Dartmoor and things, now, not being rude because it's only the age I am now, but you were pushing on, either getting near 40 or early 40.
Oh, yeah.
Did you find it strange watching age take over in the sense that.
I must say this. I was still terribly active physically. More than 20 years. I'm a bit decrepit now, Simon, but I never let that go. They used to call me all kinds, the mountain goat. All this world, you know, God said, don't keep up the end of the mountain goat. Don't go jogging with him.
So you managed to maintain your physical condition
definitely.
Despite your age?
Oh, definitely. I could beat anybody in the unit, if I don't mind. I was never beaten in the unit. Ever. In over 20 odd years.
At what?
Swimming, boxing. Nobody ever beat me. That's just in the unit. Nobody.
And did life change much? I mean, were it the same sort of characters in the battalion?
Same. A lot of the same old cronies. And the younger ones, as we young when I left, were getting up to corporals. Some were getting into the sergeant's mess, etc. And
Did you ever sometimes wonder about some of you Second World War sergeants and things being dead weight at the top?
Yeah. But they've been there a long time. And they never did anything wrong that type. They were neither used for roaring, as far as I was concerned. But they kept their nose clean. They could get drunk all day, but never get in trouble because they were steeped in it. And they were farmed out to jobs, like in the quartermaster's stores.
But that never happened. You never felt that you were dead weight?
Oh, no. If I'd been dead weight, I'd have left. I'd have left.
What about the officers? Were they as good as you were used to?
We've always had pretty good officers. The majority of officers are pretty good. You had some duckheads, I wouldn't name them, it's not fair. And I mean duckheads, they were enormous duckheads.
What would they do? What was wrong with them?
Not interested. No soldiering qualities whatsoever. One in particular, great reputation in the regiment, his family. Even his father said, get the idiot out, or words to that effect. And they did, they sent him to the pay call. And they sent them off on jobs like that. But not many. We've always been pretty well. A lot of people won't agree, but by and large,